This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're talking to Marty Whittakin, who is a board-certified clinical nutritionist, well-known through her books, The Probiotic Cure, Aloe Vera Modern Science Sheds Light on Ancient Herbal Remedies, Natural Alternatives to Nexium. And I always have fun with Marty because we're truly kindred spirits, and you know we're both broadcasters, so it's always fun to interview a professional broadcaster because you can't go wrong. And B, we're on the same page with virtually every subject, so we're very much in sync. So when did you write Natural Alternatives to Nexium? How long ago was that?
The first edition came out in 2007, so...
That's a long time ago. Yeah, 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. And then a couple of years later, there was a second edition. I probably need to do a third. It's still selling well because it's still a huge problem. People thinking that they can get away with taking these acid-blocking drugs and not pay a big price
right.
in their health.
But you foresaw that 10 years ago, which is very prescient because, look, it could have panned out that, you know, your book was alarmist, that, you know, it turns out these things are harmless without consequence, and you were, chicken little, saying the sky is falling. But it turns out that the consequences of long-term use of these medications is even worse than we had then anticipated. There's some new things emerging that are quite disturbing.
I predicted those things not because I'm some kind of genius, but because it's so obvious. When you know what stomach acid is supposed to do, all you have to do is say, well, gee, what could happen to a person if they didn't digest their protein well, they couldn't make vitamin B12, they weren't good at absorbing magnesium and zinc and calcium, what are the downstream likely effects? And I found a few studies at that point that supported that, well, yeah, you're probably going to have hip fractures and pneumonia and dementia and so on, but I'm sure back then it was thought that if you were a prescriber of Nexium or the Nexium company, certainly they knew better, but they're very happy to keep selling it. They probably thought I was alarmist, but now study after study, I mean, just add to the list any body part, your
cardiovascular
kidneys,
disease,
your liver,
kidney, stroke. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is they did is, first of all, some of these studies have been criticized. They say, well, sure, you know, people who are sick, you know, they take Nexium, but they're sick. So they're not going to do as well. So they're, you know, they're at risk anyway. But what they did in a very ingenious study is they took people with stomach problems, and some of them were taking another category of medication, the older medications, Pepcid, Tagamet, you know, what are called the H2 blockers, and they matched them to people who were taking Nexium, Prilosec, Prevacid, all the various PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, the real strong medications, and they found that the side effects were much worse. And in fact, what was really disconcerting, I would say, you know, you got all these side effects, okay, you say, well, heart attack, stroke, okay, but I think the biggest side effect is when you don't live as long. That's what they found. They found that there was actually a curtailed longevity to be taking these things, even when people with other stomach problems, they had stomach problems, but they just took other medications and it didn't, limit their life expectancy.
Another study that I thought was very telling was when they took a group of people who did not have heartburn, they were not sick, they put them on the medication, and at the end of a month, they have trouble getting off because now they do have heartburn.
Yeah. That's the ideal drug, though, isn't it? I mean, that's what Big Pharma, you know, it's a guaranteed return for big pharma for decades, because now more and more Americans are finding themselves hooked on these medications. I have great difficulty weaning patients off, and we have a technique for weaning patients off. And I'm sure when you work with clients, you use things like Allo and DGL in a sort of a slow weaning process. You don't go off.
Sometimes we switch them back to the H2 blockers.
We do that too. Yes.
Back down slowly.
Yes,
but,
exactly.
This whole medication thing, it's on my mind because my husband and I were talking about it last night. He called me in to look at one of the commercials where it's showing absolutely gorgeous scenery and everybody's running through the meadows and they're, hugging their grandchildren and so on. And you have to close your eyes because sometimes it's kind of hard to take in a totally discordant message that's coming across in the auditory.
Right. And they're wheeling off all these side effects. I know what you're saying.
This stuff will kill you, but never mind. And there's only, I believe, one other country in the world that allows that advertising, but it isn't so much.
I think it's New Zealand. I think it's the only other country. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It isn't so much the individual drugs as the mentality that mm-hmm. creates that if you have any kind of problem, you take a drug for it.
Yeah, and I tell you, it's really peculiar for me as a doctor to realize that patients are being told to tell me what they think you should take. Yeah. It's like, doctor, don't you think I should be taking this? Okay, I hadn't thought of that, but since you saw the commercial, now that you mention it, I think I will prescribe that super expensive drug for you because, you asked for it, and I want to keep you as a patient because I don't want to disappoint
you. Well,
you'll
be back for another prescription for the side effects of that one. So it really is it's a self-fulfilling system that works for the drug companies. It just does not work for people. And what I love about what you do is get to the root cause, figure out what is imbalanced, fix that, and then watch how many things improve.
Indeed. And there's some unprescribing involved in that process, too.
Yeah.
I like that term, unprescribing. Let's talk about postbiotics because, we know what probiotics are. We know they're beneficial bacteria that we take in pill form or liquid form or in fermented foods. They're prebiotics, which why don't you give us a definition of pre and then let's segue into postbiotics, which is a novel concept that I think you're really responsible for promulgating.
Well, the prebiotics are the foods that the bacteria eat. And a lot of products will say they have a prebiotic in them, and they've just added inulin or FOS, kind of an isolated fiber. Those do increase the numbers of bacteria. They don't increase the diversity, though, because not all the bacteria like those. The bacteria prefer your fellow that was out in the primitive culture, they like a high fiber, diverse diet. They don't like refined foods, naked starch and sugar and so on. They like a variety of vegetables and nuts and seeds whole grains, hopefully fermented and so on. But all those foods are prebiotics. The things that you buy at the store that are fermented foods, the kombucha, the kimchi, all of those foods that can be fermented are the raw material is a prebiotic.
Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to postbiotics, I mean, that's not something people think about, but what's going on there?
Well, I don't think you give yourself enough credit. It was something you said years and years ago about Dr. O'Hara's that you thought maybe it was not so much the bacteria, but it was the other stuff in the capsule might be the most important. And that
I
got
said that?
Me.
I said that?
You said that.
Okay.
You said that.
Well, thanks for crediting me.
Yeah. Talk about prescient.
Okay.
At least you were quoted by the people at Essential Formula for saying that. And I said, well, he's a pretty smart guy. Let me think about that.
Yeah.
So the more I investigated, the more I realized that, well, if you think about it, the bacteria themselves, they crowd out bad guys, and maybe there's some hand-to-hand combat going on, but we want them mainly for what they make. they make all these things that are the natural selective antibiotics, compounds.
They're humoral factors. They're sort of like chicken soup for the gastrointestinal tract in a simplistic analogy, that they have curative effects in and of themselves.
They do. I mean, they are the ones, those substances they make are what affect your behavior, tell you if you're hungry, turn on various switches in the genes. So it's their production of things. And also, even their cell walls have messages, their DNA that's left over after they've passed on to the next generation of bacteria. So I couldn't find a term that described that whole collection of material. And so I just made up postbiotics because it kind of went along with pre, pro, and post. I thought, well, it comes after the bacteria. Mm-hmm. It made sense to me. And that was in the first draft of the book in 2007. And it's just now sort of appearing in some of the studies. But I think it's just a handy way to remind people that's important. That's the goodness that's in the fermented foods. And that's why I'm not an employee, but I'm a big fan of Dr. O'Hara's, because it's the only fermented food concentrate. And it has all of these, I don't know, maybe hundreds of substances in it, but we know there's some pretty powerful ones in there that change the environment. I can't think of another probiotic that you could chew up if you have indigestion and get help in a minute or two. There's something in there that's, you know, enzymes or something.
Yeah, mention that, because I think for, you know, a lot of people, it's all about the body count. You know, this one has, you know, 10 million, this one has 100 million, this one has 10 billion, you know, and they assay according to the numerical count of whatever, you know, often a narrow spectrum of, you know, one thing or maybe three things. But Dr. Harris is different. The count actually, you know, if you're going to go by the body count, it's not that impressive. So you might say, well, gee, I'm not going to take that. It's not that potent. So what's the rationale for taking something that's, you know, maybe less potent, but has a matrix that delivers it more effectively?
Yeah, that is a real, I think, marketing just kind of almost a scam, because you have to really stop and think about these numbers. It's like, I'll see your 10 billion and raise you 5 billion.
Right.
It's all marketing talk that doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about the quantities that we have. And as an example, if you take 100 bacteria, and they double every half an hour. You can do the math on an Excel spreadsheet and see what I mean. In 24 hours, that 100 bacteria will have become 28 quadrillion or some just ginormous number. So what's really important is to have the right bacteria, well-researched strains, and in the right environment. And to have the prebiotics and the substances that change the environment so that you have hundreds of different kinds of bacteria. They're not the same as mine, and we want to have, you can't buy a supplement of those, so let's make it just like tending a garden. Let's make sure that those bacteria are well cared for, and then you develop quadrillions of your own bacteria, and you don't worry so much about a billion. And as you know, the Dr. O'Hara's has a 3-year fermented and a 5-year fermented, which is what the doctors use.
Professional formula. Yeah,
and it has fewer bacteria, but it's more potent. So figure that out. It has to depend on what they have made. And in the next version of the Dr. O'Hara's box, I believe it's not even going to list colony forming units, this body count, because it's kind of irrelevant. The ones that are in there are really specialized and very good, but you're not going to – if you could put a bazillion in there, you'd upset the apple cart. The balance would be off. don't think you want to do it.
Well, that's also, I mean, there's another philosophy is that we're looking for that magic bullet probiotic. We're looking for the probiotic that, for example, will cause weight loss. You know, some people think it's Akkermansia, you know, species with an unpronounceable name. Others seem to enhance immunity. So everybody's trying to patent a probiotic that is designed functionally, you know, to attack one aspect of health or another. But as you point out in some of your writing on this subject, it's a matter of, you don't have a single instrument, you know, when you're doing a symphony. You need an orchestra to produce, a fabric of, sound. And similarly, that's what happens in the gut.
Well, exactly. And this is not to say that there aren't some special species like the ME3 that's in the RegActive product that creates glutathione, but you don't just do that. That's on a base of what you can create with, for example, Dr. O'Hara's. And one of the strains in there is very, very potent against some of the foodborne illness bacteria and so on, but none of them operate alone. We've got to focus on the diversity, and then you can boost one or two if you want a special thing. But I'm really worried that there will be prescription strains. They'll be very expensive, and they'll do one thing, and they won't be researched, just like drugs, won't be researched long enough to see what the unintended consequences are.
Yes, and also different strokes for different folks, because they might – everybody's genetics are different, and everyone's priming in terms of the bacterial content of their intestines is different. And, you know, it's when you introduce one variable, it can go sideways. I mean, I noticed this with giving people probiotics. Some people just feel great, everything's copacetic, and other people react negatively to strong probiotics. So you have to be careful. I wanted to just do something timely. You know, this is summer, and I keep getting calls from people saying, you know, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to this or that or the, you know, exotic locale. I'm going on a cruise. I'm going to Africa. What should I take? Can you speak to that issue? Certainly probiotics could figure into a preventive program. Is there any studies that show it, you know, prevents Montezuma's revenge or diarrheal disease?
Yes. And in fact, it can stop. I know people who have had an exposure to some kind of food poisoning, and they could chew up a bunch of Dr. O'Hara's real fast and put a stop to it. But I always take it, and it doesn't have to be refrigerated, so it makes it very easy, and take the blister packs with you.
Yeah.
I usually take and recommend that people take magnesium with them, because partly the stress, change in diet, but people often become constipated while they're traveling. That's a good thing to have. I would take a tube of aloe vera jelly by that same company, Lily of the Desert, because it's 99% aloe, and what you're going to buy in the gift shop probably, you know, they waved an aloe vera leaf over a 50-gallon drum.
Yeah.
And because if you get a sunburn or any kind of...
Oh, this is for topical use, yeah.
Yeah, topical use.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a jelly that you rub, you know, on your skin. So those would be three things that would keep you out of trouble. And if you're going on a boat, cruise, anything on the water, some ginger.
Yeah,
you can do capsules, but also... candied ginger is a good thing to have to chew if you're getting all seasick, going scuba diving or whatever. We always have it in our gear.
You mean the scuba diving, because you can get ear stuff going on, which could create dizziness. Is that what you're thinking?
No, well, the boat sometimes.
Oh, the boat. Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Nausea.
Okay.
And,
yeah, seasickness on the way. Yeah, exactly. The bouncing boat. Phenomenon.
So there's four things: Dr. O'Hara's, magnesium, aloe vera jelly, and ginger.
Okay, those are sound recommendations. What are you featuring on your radio program and on your website this month?
Oh, well, every week it's something different. It's so fun to have all these great people. I just interviewed Jim LaBelle, a pharmacist. Yeah.
Jim's a frequent guest on my program as well. He's excellent.
Absolutely, and we always have a good time. And I had Doug Kaufman on. We were talking about yeast and fungus as a cause of cancer and how it often mimics cancer.
He's a fellow Texan. He has a program out of Texas.
Yes, a television program, and he's an author of several books on fungus. He's starting to get some traction with oncologists, which is great. He's been invited to speak to a number of oncology meetings, and
what I found interesting, you know, this, we've been around the block with this yeast connection thing, and you probably were there at the inception, you know, when Dr. Truss and Dr. Crook were talking about it in the 80s. But, you know, what's happened on this yeast connection thing is quite fascinating, is that people are now doing research showing that there's a relationship between yeast and Crohn's disease. And a strategy that I've used in patients with gastrointestinal illness for many years is to treat yeast, and many get better. And now science is finally coming around. Of course, 30 years later, these eccentric worldviews about, you know, yeast is thought to be the ultimate quackery. This concept is being revived and vindicated. So, you know, we're certainly seeing
it. If it's only been 30 years, it's 10 years ahead of schedule, because it typically takes 40 years for a real breakthrough to get into practice. But interesting that you mentioned that, because our 20th anniversary is in the middle of August, and on that show I'm planning to play clips. And my very second guest in 1997 was William Crook.
Oh, wow.
And I'm listening to that tape, and by golly, everything he was saying is still true today, and they're still trying to get their arms around it. So,
That is so great that you kept archives of that, because I've had some really distinguished guests on my show, and it's all kind of lost on the cutting room floor because the radio station that I broadcast from, you know, didn't keep good records. But, you know, of course, we had people like Linus Pauling, Jack LaLanne. I remember I couldn't get a word in edgewise with Jack LaLanne. He was, first of all, he was hard of hearing, and he was talking a mile a minute. of course, we had Dr. Crook on the program several times, because it was, you know, the hot topic in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, some pretty good stuff. So congratulations on 20 years of broadcasting. You know, it's great that you're going to do a retrospective, because, hey, in a lot of respects, you're out in front of the curb.
My idea is to go through, like we had Robert Adkins on.
Oh, indeed.
And that was really, really long time ago. And he was talking about the problem with refined carbohydrates. And, well, you know, now that there's some studies, and if somebody at Harvard says it's a good idea, well, now it's legitimate. Exactly. Well, it was legitimate then. I'm sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember that we were, Bob Atkins and I were on the same radio station. And of course, I knew Bob very well. And again, you know, here's another example of someone who is very prescient, but was much maligned, very much maligned, you know, and it's impossible. And now low-carb diets are all the rage, and the science is supporting them, and the science is vindicating saturated fats and cholesterol. So there's been a real sea change, and it's only too bad that Bob Atkins wasn't around to witness it. But
yeah. Well, I think he knew it was going to come, because he knew it was the truth, and the truth will out in the end. But I think the reason that people like that can stick with it, and people like you and I recognize that early on and adopt it, is because if you also apply some common sense and you look at it through the filter of, well, what works throughout history, what works in other cultures that are much healthier than we are, it helps you avoid some of the fads that come out because of either economic interests or because of somebody important wrote a book and everybody saluting to whatever that thing is at the moment. If you put it to those tests, it keeps you out of a lot of trouble.
Well, indeed. And, you know, what I adopt is I go back to my college major, which was anthropology, and reviewing the latest anthropological evidence suggests that, you know, we're genetically programmed and physically designed to consume some animal protein, saturated fat, And yes, lots of plant foods and lots of fiber, of course. You know, there's little substantiation for the view that we should be eating like our monkey ancestors did 10 million years ago, who lived in trees and gathered, fruits and leaves. I think that, our evolution diverged around 5 or 6 million years ago, and we had developed the capacity to hunt and cook and prepare foods, and that was the launch of the brain revolution and the cultural revolution that make us human.
And I wonder how many millions of years will it take for us to adapt to where we thrive on Pop-Tarts and bagels and sugar-coated cereal and white bread and
well, if if Darwin was right and natural selection is a real thing, we will be extinct. So there is no adaptation to that kind of diet. So, it's like we'll go the way of the dinosaurs. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always nice to hear your reflections on various aspects of nutrition. You can follow Marty Witkin at the website healthbynatureshow.com. There you can get podcasts and you can read her blogs and articles. And any other resources that we can point listeners to?
Well, on healthybynatureshow.com, I've got a library on there, and you can sign up for a free newsletter that I send out weekly to point out whatever the blog is about, and I have a series of video or tapes of classes on digestion. So just all about spreading the good word, and I do thank you kindly for having me on. It's always great pleasure. You're one of my heroes, and I always go away feeling that I've learned a lot. So,
well, thank you so much, and let's issue a general call to action about one of our good sponsors. Dr. Hira's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. And now, this is inevitable because Amazon.com's cleaning everybody's clock. They're now available at Amazon.com. So please visit.
I remember when they first were talking about it on my show 15 years ago, you had to get it by mail. You couldn't get it anywhere. So I think the fact that it's available so many places now is just a testament to how well it works.
Indeed. So you can visit www.essentialformulas.com to find a retailer near you. Thanks so much, Marty Witkin, for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.